You're listening to The Last Word on Hockey with Jim Beringer, Coach Jay, and Mark Weiss on Northeast Streaming Sports.
Welcome back to another episode of The Last Word on Hockey here on Mad Radio Network. Lots of things going on in the National Hockey League this week. We are joined again by a special guest. I'm joined by Dave McCarthy, host of the Sunday Brunch on SiriusXM NHL Network Radio, as well as Ice Cap, and he's the Toronto correspondent for NHL.com. Thank you so much for coming on this evening to talk some hockey with us.
Thanks for reading my entire resume, Jim. I appreciate that.
Hey, no problem. Hey, I gotta write it down and make my guests feel welcome here on the show.
That's why I keep coming on. Always good to be on with you boys. What's going on?
Hey, you know, not much. A lot of news up by your way. And I guess we're going to start with the big news out of the National Hockey League tonight. The Department of Player Safety suspended Mark Scheifele 4 games for charging on Montreal's Jake Evans last night towards the end of the game, which was a really good game. Unfortunately, it ended with some tarnishment with that play. I just want to get your thoughts on the hit and the suspension, Dave.
Yeah, it's more or less what I was expecting, to be honest with you. As soon as I saw the hit, in no world did I ever think this was going to be something that would be longer than a 5-game suspension and thus would have warranted an in-person hearing. I never once thought that. The issue with the hit is
the results.
Well, right. That did not help. See, to me, right away, everybody was going on about, oh, look, he came from the other end of the ice. You know, he came 190 feet. Right. So here's the thing, right? Is that there was a player at the other end of the ice with a loose puck and an empty net, and Mark Scheifele was interested in preventing that goal in a 1-goal game with a minute left, so his team would have an opportunity to come back. So he's going to skate down the other end of the ice, try to prevent that. He stopped striding the last 15, 20 feet, which I think ultimately really saved him here. Cause if he had kept striding through, then I think he would have been in a really, really tight spot. Where he erred was that he made contact with the head as the principal point of contact and the arm came up. And I don't know if you boys have seen the angle, right, the chicken wing. Yeah. I don't know if you've seen the angle from the corner behind the goal line where you see Scheifele come into the shot and you really get a clear look at Evans' head.
Yeah.
You know, that to me was, how shall we say, that was the smoking gun, so to speak. Yeah. That was
the Zapruder film.
Yeah.
Yes. You can say that in your country. I can't, not being from your country. But you're not wrong.
It's okay. Your cousins.
Well, still, I mean, you're not wrong. Right. So that was an indefensible look for Scheifele. If he had, and it's so difficult because when you're doing it in real time, it goes a million miles an hour. We sit back and we dissect it frame by frame as your Zapruder film was. It becomes a lot easier. So if he had kept the arm down and he had gone through the body, maybe even lowered a little bit to not make contact with the head, but, you know, still stayed above Evan's knee, he maybe would have gotten away with it. But when the arm comes up and you make contact with the head and then you see the ensuing result, I would have given him 3, 4. Yeah, okay, I can live with that too. But, yeah, you know, the folks saying ban him for the playoffs, never once did I think that was going to happen.
No. I didn't think banning him for the playoffs was the right call. I thought, you know, my first initial reaction was maybe he gets the series if it's an in-person hearing. But I was erring between two and four games because the history, you know, he's a likable guy, but he has no history and everything.
See, I don't think that should matter too much, because I think at the end of the day, you know, okay, I know there is some allotment based in terms of past precedent, but if the initial act is egregious, whether or not you've done it before, I think you measure it on its own, you know, and I think they did in this case. So if Tom Wilson had to deliver that hit, would it have been more?
Exactly.
Probably. But it's such a difficult hit because he was trying to prevent a goal. He stopped striding, but he still delivered a hit that was one that you can't really deliver. So I think four games was okay. I'm all right with that.
Yeah, so am I. And, you know, watching it, like, I've watched it so many times, and everybody's like, oh, he's trying to prevent a goal. Imagine if he just puts the stick down and just tries to check it, and he might be able to just prevent the goal that way.
That was the problem. He didn't try to play the puck, which was further indictable in addition to that angle from the corner where it was head contact, no attempt to play the puck. You lose a lot of defense that way. The only thing I think that really saved him from a significant one is that he stopped stride in the last 15, 20 feet, which to me mitigated. There was still some charge, but it mitigated the extent to which you could suggest that he was charging.
You know what, guys? I look at it this way. I agree with you, Dave. You said about not striding and that kind of helps his defense, but it also hurts his defense because right. I've been in that play before, and I've administered that hit, and I'm going to be honest over here. If I'm trying to stop the goal, which is what my primary thing is to do, because if that goal goes in, the game's over. If I stop the goal, we still have a one goal game and we have a chance. I'm diving head first to hit that puck and make sure that he can't wrap it around, because I know he can't hit me because he's making the wrap. So he doesn't have any body in the game either. So I can dive, get his stick and get the puck. But if I stop striding, then I'm looking like I'm going to hit him. Why would I stop striding if I'm trying to break it up?
Well, okay, a couple of things here. First, and I'm saying this in all due respect because I don't know the answer. What level of hockey have you played?
Medium level. I haven't played pro hockey, that's for sure.
What is medium level? Like men's league?
Like a level men's league travel type hockey.
Okay, so the speed at which that, and I haven't played a level that's, you know, anywhere near much higher either. The speed that that's going, even if you dive head first, you'll probably come to a stop well before the end boards. Mark Scheifele strides head first. He's probably going neck first into the end boards, or Jake Evans skates. He put himself in a real tough spot.
Oh, I've hit those boards almost head first where I have to spin it out at the last second.
Oh,
I'm an idiot. I admit that completely.
But
I totally admit
that. You've
got
a lot more time to make a decision to spin out at the last second than when you're going 40 kilometers an hour, because you're not going 40 kilometers an hour. Scheifele was pretty darn close to that.
One way, then that's the only chance I'm going that fast.
That's what I'm saying. So that's what I heard some people suggest is, oh, well, he should have dove head first. Yeah, and then he'll go, you know, neck first into Evan's skates or the end boards and put him, you know, that's not going to end well either. So
I just think he was in a no-win situation.
He was in a no-win situation, really. I don't disagree with that.
I think
at all.
The dumbest thing is I've heard people say, well, at the last second when the puck went in, why didn't he pull up? I'm like,
There's no way.
He can't pull up.
So talk about a blown tire.
the initial point of contact to when the puck crossed the line was, I mean, under a second. You don't have that kind of time to, if that, you don't have that kind of time to alter your course at that point. And like I said, the problem was that the arm came up and I think he figured, well, now that I'm here, I'm going to get a good lick in. And that's what worked against him. If he had kept the arm down and he had just kept gliding in and Evans were to run into him, so to speak, you know, maybe gets away with it, but you know, that's why he did, because he didn't make an attempt to play the puck and the arm came up.
What do you think about the other school of thought, which is we're hearing people from the other side of the coin saying things like, well, you know, Evans shouldn't have had his head down. It's his own fault. He should have been in the corner. He should never have been trying for the wraparound in the first place. No, that's nonsense. I hate victim blaming, to be quite frank, but that's what the other school's saying.
Well, he's trying to score a goal.
He's trying to put the game on ice.
He's trying to put the game away. What do you want him to do? Go behind the net and then just, you know, tuck it in the corner? No, he's trying to put it in
the
net.
That's exactly what they're saying. He should have gone in the corner and killed time and never put his head down. And I think that's excusing.
That's nonsense too. So if I've got an opportunity to put it in the net, I'm going to try and take that. Was his head down? Yeah. I think he has an idea of what's coming. I really do, because again, in the National League, when Evans is skating down the ice, he knows who's coming. He has an idea that there's someone coming down the ice trying to stop him. But does he expect to get clobbered to that extent?
No.
I think he figures he's going to get hit, but you know, I think also at times you get into this mindset of like, there's the empty net, I got to put it in. And for a moment, you just even stop thinking about what could happen. But I don't fault him one bit for going to the empty net, because it's what he's trying to do. He's trying to put it in the net. I have no problem with that. I don't think it's his fault at all.
No, I agree 100%.
I was offended by people trying to blame the victim here.
No. You can't blame Evans, because he outskated every Winnipeg Jets player that was in the Montreal Canadiens zone with about a minute left to put the game on ice. It's just a shame that the way the game ended, because it was a really good game. It was back and forth. Montreal came out strong. Winnipeg fought back. And, you know, now the series has really changed after Montreal takes game one. And, you know, we got to see what Winnipeg does going forward. I don't know how they recover with it. You know, they didn't recover last year when Scheifele got injured. Let's see how they do now.
That's what I wanted to ask Dave. What do we think now about, I mean, I hate to move past the injury and the suspension, but how does Winnipeg react losing such a key player like Scheifele? He's not a ham and egger.
No, he is not. It's a great point that you bring up, that he was out of last year's series, and what was against Calgary, right? That really caused him a problem at that point. So, how do they recover? I don't think the series is over by any stretch, just because Montreal to me is not a team that necessarily blows me away. I think they really zeroed in on their identity in the latter stages of that Leafs series, sort of in game five, when they realized, look, the best way we're going to have it being successful is to play physically. And they did so, and they did it really well. And Carey Price went legend. So he's got to continue to be good, but Winnipeg still got a lot of good players up front. Like, their third line is really strong. They may have to rejig the lines a little bit without Scheifele, but that Copp, Appleton, Lowry line is really, really strong. You know, they've got Blake Wheeler, they've got Nick Ehlers, they've got Kyle Connor.
Pierre-Luc Dubois. I want to interrupt you for one quick second. You brought up a good name, Nick Ehlers. Kudos to what that guy did.
Yes.
I mean, we have to call that guy, if there's a hero for a bad situation, that guy was the hero, because he made sure that nobody from that scrum either bladed or fell on poor Evans while he was on the ground. And they don't even wear the same sweater.
No, Nick Ehlers is a good guy. One of my favorite guys to talk to when he rolls through town, when, you know, that was the thing. Hopefully soon again. But no, he's a really, really good guy. I remember he played his 300th game earlier in the year, and he was asked about what that means to him. And his response, it wasn't about him at all. He said, well, you know, the further I get on in my career and the more success that I have, he said, well, you know, when I go back home to Denmark and I run my hockey schools, it just gives me a better platform to try to draw more people into the game, more kids into the game, and get them inspired. And like, that was his response. It was all about finding ways to help other folks. I thought that was really cool. So yeah, good point that you bring up on Ehlers. But I still think this Jets team is really good. I think their goaltending can be right there with Carey Price, with Connor Hellebuyck. I still think this is going to be a long series. So, Montreal won the first game against Toronto, then Toronto came back. Even without Tavares, you can make the argument Tavares kind of like Scheifele, you know, to an extent. I think Winnipeg's got an opportunity to bounce back here and see if they can rally around the loss of Scheifele being out for a few games, and see if they can push Montreal. Because let's be honest here, Montreal, give them a lot of credit doing what they did getting past Toronto, but they're not Tampa. They're not Colorado. No. They're not Carolina.
No.
No, they are not. No, they are not. And Colorado looks really solid. But you, again, yeah, you mentioned the Leafs and what happened in the first round with Montreal. Leafs up 3-1 on the Canadiens. Looked like the series, you know, wrapped up and Montreal changed their game. And I was talking with some people. Some people said the Leafs lost it in game 5. Others say they lost it in game 6. Your opinion, Dave, where do you think the Leafs lost the series?
I think game 5. Because exactly. I think anytime you get to a game 7, you roll the dice, right? Anybody can beat anybody one night. Game 5 on home ice, you win 3 in a row. Like, that was, to me, where all of the previous shortcomings in the first round, where we heard, oh, this could be a lesson learned, and we now know what it takes to close out a series, and it's hard to close out a series, and we got to get that killer instinct. Well, that was your opportunity. Like, I think Montreal, by and large, if Toronto had come out and exacted their will on the game in the first period, I think Montreal was in a position where they were going to be like, okay, check, please. Like, it's over with. Let's go home. But they didn't. They came out and they dipped their toe in the water and they let Montreal dictate the terms of play. And then they started feeling good about themselves. And then they got that win. And then I think it was Brendan Gallagher after game 7 said, well, that's when we thought, well, okay, we got our win now. Now we're feeling good about ourselves. Now we know the type of style that we need to play in order to have some success here. And they just kept running. So I thought that was a huge missed opportunity in game 5 to come out as meekly as the Leafs did and sort of essentially play a Tuesday game in November and see if talent would win the day. And that to me was what was the most disappointing part from the Leafs standpoint, because they had an opportunity to just put the nail in the ground there and finish it off. And they let Montreal hang around.
Yeah, I agree with that. And watching game 7, and I watched every game of this series, but watching game 7, once Gallagher goal went in, I looked at the Leafs bench and I just saw like nothingness. They're like, this is over.
Death warmed over.
They just didn't know how to rally, and there was a lot of game left. And how do they change that going forward?
Yeah, I mean, that's the question. That's the $20 million question right now, because we've been asking that question in these parts for the last 5 years now. First year against Washington, first year against Boston, yeah, I can give you a pass. Second year against Boston, or, you know, second time against Boston, okay, yeah, I still think they were a better team, and the experience won the day. But, man, last year against Columbus and now this year against Toronto, or against Montreal, the lack of killer instinct is something that they're going to need to try and find a way to summon in some form or another. Because here's what I'll say, and I know a lot of people will call me an old hockey man for saying this, but if anyone is interested still in arguing with me that the regular season is the same style of hockey that you need to play in the playoffs in order to go on a long run, I'd like, if it pleased the court, I'd like to enter into evidence game 2, Vegas, Colorado last night.
Oh, yeah. Exhibit and A, as said on Twitter.
People's Exhibit A, because that was a different sport than what we saw at any point during the Leafs Habs series. Okay, and it wasn't dirty hockey. It wasn't violent hockey or anything that everyone seems to have such an issue with. And I don't want violent or dirty hockey either. But it was intense hockey. There was a fever pitch every shift from start to finish of that game. Every inch of the ice was contested. And that was not a Tuesday game in November. No. The Leafs played those types of games in that series, and they got to game 7 on their talent. And then when Montreal found a way to raise their game a little bit more, Leafs didn't have a pushback. So how do they find that?
How do they do it without changing personnel? Because I think personnel has to be shifted.
I don't necessarily know if you do shift the personnel right now, because the most difficult thing to procure in the National Hockey League is talent. And as much as I love tough physical, and you need talent in order to win, right? So in Tampa Bay, oh, we're talking about Blake Coleman chipping in and Barkley Goodrow chipping in and Alex Killorn and some secondary scoring. And all that's great. But if Nikita Kucherov and Braden Point are not doing their thing, they're not winning Stanley Cups, and it's not even close. It doesn't matter then. That's why Tampa had success. Toronto's got if Matthews and Marner did their thing that they did during the regular year, that's why they finished 18 points ahead of Montreal, right, during the regular year, is that Matthews and Marner were the difference on their team that Montreal did not have. And if Matthews Marner did their thing during the playoffs, they don't even get to game seven, but they didn't do it. But okay, so you take them out. Well, who are you replacing? You're not trading Austin Matthews. Don't be stupid here. I don't think you're trading William Nylander because he played well, quite frankly, in the playoffs. In his
he
contract.
Actually played well in the top four. He really did.
Yeah, and if that's the way he's going to play, 6'9 is a bargain.
But you and I both know the Toronto fan base is always on that guy's case.
Who?
Nylander.
They're Nylander? Always on his case.
Yeah, well, not now. I haven't heard them on his case because he played the ways that – so that. But that's the point. That's the point. I 100% agree. A lot of – well, there's a lot of people that defend him to the end of time, and there's a lot of people that, yes, get on his case. Why? Because he doesn't play like that very often. And you know that that's his potential. And what we saw was what he can do. That's why people criticize him. But I haven't heard anybody criticizing him now because he played up to his potential. So play to that potential, you have no problem. So you're not trading William Nylander. Tavares isn't going anywhere because you got no move clause. The only guy you really could trade is Marner. But I don't think, like, so you trade Marner. What are you getting for the guy? Like, seriously, what are you getting for the guy? And don't name me a first-round pick and a high-level prospect, or a
that's,
couple.
That's not going to fly in Toronto.
Well, it's no good because you're looking at winning now. So that doesn't help you. And you've got Austin Matthews on the books for 3 more years. You got Jake Muzzin on the books for 2, maybe 3 more years. Morgan Riley is a free agent at the end of next year. Like, the time is now. So don't talk to me about 2 or 3 years from now. It's no good. You need now. Who are you getting if you trade Marner that's going to help you next year? I don't know who that guy is. So I think you come back and you hope that he's learned his lesson once and for all as to where he needs to get his game to in the playoffs. And you hope that, you know, the old Sidney Crosby line back in, what was it, 08, that commercial where he was sitting hunched over on the boards and they made a picture out of it. And the line was, I never want to be in that picture again. You remember that?
Yeah, I remember that. I do.
You know, I do. So, and Sid wasn't. He wasn't.
He, he never was. Like, not to say that his game wasn't where it needed to be then, but he found a way to raise it yet another notch. And that's what Mitch Marner and frankly, Austin Matthews need to do as well. And if they can find that other notch, man, they've got all the talent in the world to just be better than the guy they're facing if they can outwork that guy at the same time.
You know, I didn't feel like it was outworking, though, because to be quite honest, you just said it, you know, in the beginning, you said Carey Price played legend. And sometimes when those guys play at that level, it doesn't matter who's sniping. The puck looks like you're shooting a beach ball at a wall and just can't get through the guy. And he played incredible.
He did. But at the same time, I still don't think Matthews or Marner commanded the play the way they did in the regular season or the way Nathan MacKinnon and Gabriel Landeskog and Mikko Rantanen are doing in Colorado or Kucherov and going to Tampa.
They figured it out after getting knocked out.
Right. Like you watch the Leafs and then you watch Colorado or you watch Tampa. And I just talk about how they're commanding the play, the types of there's no comparison. So if Matthews and Marner generate that level of chance, ultimately with their skill, it's going to go in the net sooner rather than later. But I still think at times in that series, they took what was there to be had, but
there wasn't much there.
There wasn't much there, and they didn't find a way to force the issue another level.
I just think that they made a mistake because Montreal's defense is older. And if they had those guys chasing them, they would have tired guys like Weber out very easily. And instead, they didn't take advantage of that. Because in a 7-game series, older defensemen, man, they're just dragging.
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, I think Montreal's D played quite well, but
they did.
But I don't disagree. Like, if the talent is there for Toronto to be better than Montreal, but the same level of fever pitch and killer instinct and intensity was not there the way it has been for other teams that have subsequently advanced to the second round. That was the difference in the series to me. It really was.
I agree with that 100%. And you bring up Colorado and Tampa Bay. The one thing that those two teams are doing is converting on the power play on their special team. And Toronto didn't do that against Montreal. And when Montreal had their power play opportunities, they scored. And that was the difference in that series.
Well, it helped. It certainly didn't help them in what was it, you know, first four games, but they started to put it in the net later in the series. And you're right, it made a difference. Toronto's power play is a real issue. Like, it really, really is. It's not just this year. It went back to last year, too. It was no good. So this is like a two-year problem that they're going to have to try and find a way to solve, because it's not going to work when you only have one option. And really, the only option is Austin Matthews. You know, and no one else respects anybody else because Marner's not a threat to shoot from where he was. Didn't really have an interior option. Never tried to work the puck inside. And Morgan Rielly, for the bulk of the year, doesn't have a point shot that scares you. So it was all Matthews all the time, and people figure that out pretty fast, and they took it away. So they're good, whether it's personnel, scheme changes, whatever it might be, they got to find a way to try something different, because what they've been trying now for the better part of the last couple of years, it's not working, and the jury is out on it.
Yeah. They just confound me, because I look at that team and I say, you can't move the big four for a lot of reasons. You outlined them all. You have to add somebody, obviously, or some people. You got to get some character, second and third line guys out there who are gonna pick up the slack when the top guys don't score in the playoffs. And maybe the goaltending situation might have been a problem. I also think that, you know, I hate to be an excuse maker, but you lose your captain in the series like they did, and there could have been a difference there too. I mean, I don't know, but I don't think we'll ever know, but I think that that's a big loss.
It did not help. I mean, John Tavares just paid $11 million because he's a big part of that team. And if he could have been an option that chipped in with Matthews and Marner being shut down, as sometimes top players are in playoff series, that would have gone a long way. And you're 100% right. I mean, you can't fault him because he was unable to play, but if he had been in the lineup, yeah, like, you think of everything that went wrong, everything that could have gone wrong for the Leafs went wrong. Tavares was rendered a non-factor in the series because he got hurt. They brought in Nick Foligno because they thought he was going to be part of the top six. He got hurt, so he wasn't there. Well, now you've taken away two parts of your top six that were essentially non-factors in the series. Then Matthews and Marner get shut down. Then you lose Jake Muzzin late in the series. I don't think that had that big of an impact, to be honest with you, by the time he got hurt. But like, everything that could have gone wrong went wrong for Toronto. And it was, as Lou said, an unfortunate set of circumstances back in the day. But, you know, a lot of things conspired against the Leafs.
And everything on the other side for the Habs absolutely went right. So it's like, everything went wrong. For the other guys, everything went right. Carey plays epic. The four lines actually start clicking. They play physical. And somehow, some way, shape, or form, they found a way to summon the miracles and the ghosts of Atwater and St. Catherine and roll it into one series for them and bring it over to the Bell Center. But they needed everything to go right. They still could have lost anyway.
Yeah, no, I mean, exactly. And all they needed was Matthews and Marner to have one game where they were like themselves, and that would have been it. But they... You know, Matthews was pretty good, I thought, in game two, okay in game three, but Marner never really was himself. And
he was frustrated with himself.
He frustrated in game seven. He just didn't look himself, didn't command the play. And you're right. Everything that had to go right for Montreal to win went right, and everything that went wrong for Toronto, it really worked against them.
So, Dave, I know with the locker clean out yesterday, and a lot of guys are not really talking about futures up there, but they have a lot of free agents this year. Zach Hyman being one of them, Freddie, Foligno, special. Who do you see coming back? Like, is Hyman a guy that they definitely want to try to bring back, or who are they going to try to walk away from and try to bring back to, you know, try to take another run at this thing next year?
Well, they'd like to bring Spezza back, and I think he'd like to come back, and I think there's a deal there to be made. I think he played quite well. Freddie, I would be surprised if he's back. They'd like to bring Zach Hyman back, but he's in an interesting position because I don't think he'll ever be in a better position to command more money than he is right now. But I think he's also smart enough to know that, okay, do I go take 5.75x elsewhere, or do I take 4.8 here and continue to be in a good position to have success and be around my family in the city that I grew up in, and I've got my support system and I've got my parents here. I got a young kid. I don't have to go through that move, all of that. Like, is that worth the extra money that he may get elsewhere where they bring him in and it's okay, now you're going to be one of the guys? He's not a the guy type player. He's a really good complimentary piece when you've got a couple of guys on the line who are better than him. So it's going to be interesting. They'd like to bring him back. I think there will be a deal there to be made. And I think Zach is an intelligent enough guy to understand that. And I'm not saying he would be unintelligent if he chooses to go elsewhere, because I haven't met the guy that has enough money, but you know, right. But there's
introduce him to me. I want to borrow some.
Right. Yeah. And there's a value staying here where, you know, if you were to leave 800 or 900 or $1 million on the table a year, you know, that, okay, you get that money elsewhere, but what do you lose in getting it? And I, my point is, I think he loses a lot from the position that he's in. So, you know, we'll see on that. But I think there's appetite for both sides to try and find something to be made to get done.
I think Toronto realizes that Zach is the kind of player. They need more Zach Hyman's on this team, to be honest. They need those kind of guys, and they're not going to let this guy leave his hometown.
Well, you're right. I mean, if they could have a guy like him on each line, that would be fantastic. Exactly. You know, but at the
everybody
same time,
everybody wants that kind of guy.
Yeah, but at the same time, he's an unrestricted free agent, and Toronto's, as you alluded to, they're in a bit of a tight spot financially. They can only offer so much. So if
that's
team
why
comes,
I think Freddie's long gone. They're not giving him.
Yeah. If a team comes out of the water and blows Zach away, and it's like $2 million a year, I would be surprised, but you never know. All it takes is one. And what if he decides that, well, man, it's you know, 2 a year times 5, man, it's hard to leave 10 sheets on the table.
I know.
Yeah, I hear you on that. Dave, yeah, just quick one more thing before you let you get out of here. I know you want to get back watching the games, and I know you got to prep tonight for the show. You know, you talked about Colorado Vegas. Colorado just looks like they're on a mission this year to win the Stanley Cup after what happened last year in Game 7. They remind me, you know, I know, I don't know how many guys are big basketball guys here, but it reminds me of the Spurs when they lost to the Heat all those years ago and they came back and won. They have that same instinct right now and that same mission. And Colorado just looks so good and so much better than everybody else right now.
I don't disagree. There's really not too much that I can pick at with that team when it comes to imperfections. I mean, their forwards top to bottom are contributing. Their D is unbelievable, and they're getting great goaltending. So I don't see a flaw on this team right now. And until they show me otherwise, it's pretty hard to bet against them. Really hope they'll end up facing Tampa at some point, because I think Tampa is a pretty darn good team as well with not too many flaws. That'd be a heck of a series.
I'd take that in a Stanley Cup final for sure. That'd be a fun series to watch. I think that's the kind of hockey people want to see. Not to say that we don't want to see physicality in a series, but that would be the two best teams really going after it. I would. That's a series I want to see for sure.
Big time, 100%.
Dave, thanks so much for coming on tonight. I appreciate it. I know we were talking about it the whole week, trying to get some reaction from Toronto and obviously with the Scheifele news, but thanks for taking time out of your day and your night to come on to the show and talk some hockey with us.
Awesome. Thanks, boys. Appreciate it. Keep well.
All right. You have a good one. All right.
Thanks, Dave. You guys got me outnumbered with the hats. I'm the only one in the pocket, man.
Yeah. All right, Dave. You have a good one. Mark,
thanks, boys.
All right, have a good one, Dave.
Hey, Jimmy, I think we got a promo, a big show on Saturday, a location
show. We do have a big show on Saturday. The last word on hockey, this has been this season 2, episode 23 with Dave McCarthy from SiriusXM NHL Network Radio, Ice Cap, and Sunday Brunch host, as well as Toronto correspondent of NHL.com. But myself, Mark Weiss, and Coach Jay, who's not here right now, we will be live from Nassau Coliseum on Saturday before game 4 of the East Division final between the Boston Bruins and New York Islanders. Currently, the Bruins lead. The Islanders won 1-0 in a great game. But we are going to game 4, and Mad Radio Network will be there. The Last Word on Hockey will be there. First in-person game since the pandemic. Can't wait.
Cannot wait. Everybody tune in to catch us live. Ask tons of questions, although you'll be hearing a lot of people in the background too, I can guarantee you.
What are we thinking for the show? Same normal time before puck drop, or are we going to try to do it a little earlier?
What time's puck drop? 7:30?
7:15.
7:15. So I think we get on air probably about 5:45, and we run till about 6:45. We get through security and we get in the barn.
There it is. I like it. This is going to be fun. It's going to be a live
show. And maybe we'll do some little live stuff in between at intermission time.
We will, because the house is going to be rocking. You know, fans are going to be talking. But again, thanks for everybody for tuning in. 2 impromptu episodes this week with a lot of hockey going on. I know it's been a lot of content on the network, but we just felt like we need to come in here, talk about this. Again, thanks for Dave McCarthy for coming on. Mark, thanks for joining. And thanks for everybody for tuning in. And we'll see you on Saturday night from Nassau.